SBS Radio.
We have conducted a research project, a project funded by the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute, looking at the experience of Indigenous women and children in situations of domestic and family violence and what happens in the aftermath of that violence. In particular, what options or pathways do they have in leaving domestic and family violence? Can they stay in their home? Can they leave and go to a refuge? Can they stay with family and friends? What we found in this study was that they are the three pathways that are typically available, but what routinely happens is that shelters are full in many of our domestic violence shelters around the country. And that's because the experience of domestic and family violence is very common in Australia, and it's not unusual for there to be a high demand for these services. So when our women attend these services, many are being turned away routinely.
Yeah.
And without having a home to go to for safety, they rely on family and friends to take them in. But if family and friends can't take them in, they have to return to an unsafe home. And in those contexts, child protection sees that as being unsafe for a child.
Yeah.
And women are at risk of having their children removed in these circumstances. And, you know, this is a significant problem because if women can't find a safe place to be through no fault of their own, and they become double victimised, don't they?
And children.
Both their partner and then by the state in not being able to support them adequately.
And your study concludes that the solutions available currently are just like band-aids because there's a whole lot of issues to be tackled, housing, of course, being one of them. And we have to remind our listeners that First Nations kids are the most in out of home care, and this is a very important research and topic to be discussing because the solutions out there are inadequate. Now, you say that the conference is now being held in Darwin. Indigenous women and children in remote and regional communities are particularly of greater concern. Can you tell us what their situation is and what solutions are being considered for them?
As we go out of urban environments into regional and remote areas, the availability of services becomes less. We haven't, the various states and territories haven't invested as significantly as they have in urban environments into crisis accommodation, into transitional accommodation or long-term accommodation options for women or more generally for population when you're needing housing accommodation. So when we think about these kind of contexts, it has long-term ramifications.
Yeah.
So, you will have overcrowding in regional and remote areas. You will have, people waiting very long time to get places of their own. That's a hard position to be in. If you're a person that can't go home because it's not safe and you're on a priority wait list to get public housing and you're just waiting, for many of these women, they can be waiting for a year. They can be waiting for two. They can be waiting for three. Some were waiting up to 8 years.
Just to get, and they're on a priority
list. Just get a house. And that's a significant problem. And that problem intersects significantly when you, again, with child protection, because in all of our state and territory jurisdictions, we now have prescribed time limits on how long children can be in out-of-home care. And what that means is that children, in many of those states, the maximum time that they can be in out-of-home care is 2 years, at which time it is recommended that they be placed in permanent home. What that means is that they will not be returned to their mums or their dads because they haven't been able to meet the standards required or set by child protection.
So this is punishing them, not just punishing them, it's condemning them to really a situation of precarity, a situation of hopelessness.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I'll give you an example. So we had one woman who had lost her children because of domestic violence. Yeah. To get her children back, she had to prove that she was, one, no longer using drugs or alcohol. That was a feature of the domestic and family violence. Yeah. Two, that she no longer was involved with her ex-partner. Three, that she had to have suitable housing that had enough bedrooms for her and the children, that it was a safe place, so that it wasn't in close proximity to the ex-partner, right? And that can be a difficult issue in and of itself in regional and remote settings, given how close people live together. And then fourth, she had to have a job.
Wow.
Yes, fourth, she had to have a job. So this particular woman, she had achieved all of those things bar getting a house. She'd been on a public housing wait list at that time for 2 years. She'd been excluded from private rental because she was Aboriginal.
Yeah.
So she said to me, you know, I've got this English-looking name. I'd apply online. I'd go to the rental agency. And when I turned up and they realised I was Aboriginal, that private rental property was no longer available. She just hadn't been able to get a house. Her last interaction with child protection about getting her children back broke her heart. They told me, yeah, your children are settled now. Perhaps you should just move and start a new life somewhere else. This lady said to me,
yeah,
they are my kids. I'm their mother. I want to be there for them. I just need a house.
You're with NITV Radio.
That is fundamentally what this research is about. It's demonstrating that to be a victim of violence, it has significant implications for Aboriginal women and their children. And, you know, if we don't address this issue around housing, we condemn these women to not being able to be mothers or to be able to grow up their children.
But bureaucrats who design these kind of programs, do they, these kind of so-called solutions, do they realize how difficult it can be, giving someone conditions like getting a job? Jobs are not something you just apply and get like that. You don't pick them up like you pick up fruit on a tree. And then,
no. I think that this is part of the problem. I think that there is a disconnect.
Yeah.
Between over the last 10-15 years, we've had national and state-based inquiries into family violence across the country, and in particular into Indigenous family violence. All of those reports have talked about the siloed nature of government departments and services in responding to domestic and family violence. Whilst there have been improvements, and there has in that time, there is still the problem that some departments don't work or don't talk sufficiently to each other. And that creates this disconnect, if you will, between the instructions given by one department not being known by the other department, or the decisions made by one having an impact onto the other. So, for example, another woman spoke to us about being offered a house,
yeah,
and it was across the street from her ex-partner. And when she said to them, I don't think I can take that house, it's too close to my partner, the response from housing was, this is your one and only offer. You either accept it or you go to the bottom of the list.
And if
she
accepted
the house because she'd been waiting that long.
Yeah.
She accepted the house. When she told Child Protection she had a house, they turned around and said, but you're too close to your ex, and this creates a safe issue. We can't return the children. So the two departments actually need to talk to each other. They need to be coordinated in how they do housing allocations and how they support mum in getting her children back.
Yeah, and it's not only mums. I see in some of the paperwork I've received about this research that men also, when they are breaking their DVOs or some circumstances, the conditions are not really optimal for them to be able also to comply with their own requirements so that the kids can navigate whatever difficult life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So if the men are excluded or told that they can't go near their partner because of the violence, they unless they can find accommodation with family or friends, they are effectively homeless. Unless we can respond to their housing needs as well, then we create a situation where there's applied pressure to the woman to let him come home. So she may well be able to stay in the home. If he's got no place to go, there's going to be pressure on her to accept him back, in which case he will be in breach of the order and she may well be in breach of the order for allowing him back. And the consequences become incredibly messy.
And then the kid is removed and put this 2-year time limit and the kid is gone forever. This is
it's a very upset, that's not even the right word. It's a complex situation that gets even more complex because we haven't put in the fundamentals around housing to cater to both parties.
And what's the trend? Because housing, what I think would be happening is, are the state and federal authorities doing enough to actually provide adequate housing for the most vulnerable members of the community?
As I said earlier, there is a general shortage. There is a need for housing stock in these areas. And, you know, it's a well-known fact that we are short on housing stock for these communities. And for, you know, and generally, in whether it be in an urban environment, a regional environment or a remote environment, we need more housing stock to cater to these needs. I think, you know, when we think about the solutions, I think the solutions are around, you know, that investment in housing stock to improve the, you know, the availability of housing. But it's also thinking about how we improve the way in which we deliver services, making sure that services, you know, break down those silos, but also talk more effectively together. Yeah. And it's also thinking about how we support initiatives that build and strengthen and uplift our Indigenous women so that they are supported in being the best mums, the best women, the best partners that they can be. And, you know, and equally we need to do that for men too, that a holistic response, which is consistent with what Indigenous family, you know, Indigenous reports into family violence have said for the last 15 to 20 years is that we need a holistic response. And, you know, we can keep saying that, but until the various governments actually listen and heed it, we will continue to have the problems that we are presently faced with.
Enjoy more stories in your language by visiting sbs.com.au.